Eventually back if you walk. Hare Krishna. When I left New York, we were turning on the heat and we were in Guyana turning on the fan. Very different for the system. I had a whole gathering of devotees for this past weekend, and one of the participants is a devotee named Subal, who's who used to live in the Brooklyn Temple and thereafter got married and is living somewhere else. And he came back to take part in this event, and his roommate was the same roommate that he had when he was Brahmachari, Guru Gayan. And he said, it's the same. He said, packed ashram and cold showers in the morning. So here, cold showers, nice, it's refreshing. Anyway, big change to the system. I've been requested to speak on the theme of sadhana during this visit, and I was very happy to hear that idea. Just to frame the discussion a little bit, sadhana, where does that come into the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? The teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are on the science of how to perform devotional service. There are these three categories of knowledge: sambandha, avideya, prayojana. Sambandha, avideya, prayojana are, and this is not just what Lord Chaitanya's teachings are, it's the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya, in discussion with Prakashananda Sarasati, the chief impersonalist of Benares, when he was being asked, why don't you study Vedanta? He said, my spiritual master, Ishwara Puri, considered me to be a fool. But he didn't have the qualification to study Vedanta. So he told me, you just chant Hare Krishna. You're speaking in this way, like, I don't have any qualification. So I chanted Hare Krishna. And then something happened. Like right away something happened. I started experiencing, my body was trembling and my voice was choking up and faltering and my hairs were standing on end and tears were streaming from my eyes, and I thought I was going mad. And it continued, it just got worse. So I went back to Ishwara Puri and said, am I doing something wrong, Guru Maharaj? These things are happening. And Ishwara Puri recited a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which it said that when one chants the holy name without offense, then one experiences such symptoms. Spontaneously, one begins to dance, one begins to cry, one begins to choke up, and bhava bhakti symptoms unfold. So, understanding the relationship of Vedanta flame, I understand Vedanta quite well. There are, for your information, Vedanta Sutra has four divisions. It's discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Two of the divisions deal with sambandha gyan, then one with avideya and the third with prayojana. Sambandha, what Chaitanya explained, is the teachings that explain the relationship between all things and their source of emanation. the source of emanation. And illusion is to not recognize that there is a source, and that source, because the source is emanating, the source is the proprietor of those things, all things. That's sambandha, Sanskrit word, relationship. And avideya means to act in that relationship, seeing all things in their relationship with the Supreme and using them accordingly, seeing our position in relation to the Supreme and engaging accordingly, seeing all other persons, friend, family, husband, wife, children, society, you name it, they have a relationship with Krishna, and seeing them accordingly, acting in that relationship according to the relationship with Krishna. That's avideya. And prayojana, what's the fruit of acting in that relationship? Ultimately, that fruit is love of God. So, when we say sadhana, that falls in the second category. What we do when we're acting in our relationship with Krishna. So, that's what it means. It requires sambandha gyan, because how can you act in a relationship if you don't understand who the other person is, or what things are? If you don't know what's what and who's who, how can you act properly? So there has to be some basic sambandha gyan. You have to chant Hare Krishna properly. According to Haridas Thakur, without proper sambandha gyan, you can't properly chant Hare Krishna. I'll say it the other way. There are people that chant Hare Krishna that are offensive, that have misconceptions, impersonalists chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes they chant so many things, but they chant the holy name. And they have misconceptions. I'll give an example that recently shocked my sensibility. This is a sidebar that will come back, because we need proper sambandha again. Somebody in a congregation gathering asked me a question about Gandhi. What's our view on Gandhi? I said, you want a conventional answer or you want the real answer? Well, how about both? Conventional answer was, he's a modern day saint. He chanted the holy name of Ram throughout his life. He had great appreciation for chanting the holy name of Ram and Bhagavad Gita. He said he read Bhagavad Gita every day. His inspiration in his work of his life was derived from Bhagavad Gita. That was the strength of this man's character. And he inspired many, many people. That's the conventional understanding. And he had a lot of social interests, not only apart from gaining independence from India, from England. He had a whole conception of how people should organize themselves around indigenous cottage industry, rather than depending upon jobs in the British factories. He valued agriculture-based economy, and when you grow jute, you can make jute clothing, you grow cotton, you can make cotton clothing. And indigenous industry, so people were financially independent, so they didn't have to be then financially dependent and therefore politically dependent and therefore weakened by some very qualified outside nation that had big money and invested in big money to make big factories And then people had to have their jobs from those big factories to work for those big people. Just independent income. Indigenous means locally based. Self-sustaining. Those very same ideas, by the way, in the world today, they're gaining popularity. They're gaining popularity because the economy's flat. And people are worried about where they're going to get their food and how much it's going to cost and are they going to have to grow your own. Anyway, so that's the conventional picture of Gandhi. But here's the real deal with Gandhi. He was an impersonalist. I could provide you with some specific quotes from Gandhi's writings that, you know, verbatim or taken, that explain what his, when he was chanting Ram's name, what did that mean to him? It's not what it means to us. He said, he was asked by a follower, not like some outsider. It wasn't a confrontation. He was asking, when you wrote somewhere in something that you wrote about Ram being the son of Dasarath, the husband of Sita, and the lord of my life, do you mean that literally Ram was the son of Dasarath and the husband of Sita, and for that reason is the lord of your life? And the answer was, oh no. There was no Dasarath, there was no Sita, there was no banishment in the Dandakaranya forest, there was no battle with Ravana. Rather, Ram is a force, a profound spiritual force, that when I chant Ram's name, that's what I'm connecting with. Ram, Ram, Ram. I read personally once in this Bhagavad Gita commentary, there was no Krishna that induced Arjuna to fight on the Kurukshetra battlefield. There was no battle on the Kurukshetra battlefield. None of those things ever happened. And if I have to believe that they happened and that's the price of my Hinduism, I reject my Hinduism. There was no Krishna who induced Arjuna to fight him. And who is that Krishna? The supreme force that rules the life of all. And that is my Krishna, and then so on and so on. He is the one who inspires us to be non-violent, benevolent, you know. Just like a cover over Bhagavad Gita becomes Bhagavad Gita. It's Gandhi's Bhagavad Gita, etc. You know, so some people chant the holy name. We're chanting the holy name. We think that's our sense of, that's a part of our sadhana. But sadhana means to, real meaning of sadhana is a practice. Like in any religion, there's a practice. Sometimes it happens when I'm traveling, because these days there's now a whole mixture of types of people in the airport, and when it's time for the Islamic people to say their prayers, right there in the departure gate, they set down the little mats and they play, do their sadhana. So many prayers, bowing in a certain direction. I don't know what exactly they're doing, but that's what we would call sadhana. It's a an act, a behavior that is meant to reestablish our relationship with Krishna. We have this phrase, somebody breaks a relationship with another person. So we broke our relationship with Krishna. And sadhana is to reestablish that relationship with Krishna. at least called, because it's Hare, when we're chanting that part of our sadhana, we're calling, vocative, means, oh, energy of Krishna. You're addressing personally, you're calling. Essentially, Krishna, please accept me once again. I left you. I abandoned you so long ago, it's inconceivable how long ago. Practically, interminable was the time, for undefined amount of time, I've been away from you. And I'm suffering in that position. I've been suffering all along, but I have been too stubborn and too misguided, too lazy, and too unfortunate to again establish that relationship. Now I'm wishing for you to be forgiving of my, and forgetting of that behavior. And please accept me once again. That's sadhana. Inviting that awakened state of consciousness in us to again be in our relationship with Krishna, and for Krishna to very kindly accept us in that relationship with Him. That's the spirit or the essence of what sadhana is. And it takes various forms described by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion. There are three main topics in Nectar of Devotion. Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti, or let's say Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti. And Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti means practicing sadhana according to the rules and regulations, or vidhis. You know this word, vidhi? V-I-D-D-H-I, vidhi, means rules and regulations. So according to the vidhis of scripture, we practice acting in our relationship with Krishna. Like deity worship, we're practicing acting in our relationship with Krishna. In kirtan, we're practicing acting in our relationship with Krishna, because in the spiritual world, we see in pictures the gopis, they're singing songs in glorification of Krishna. In the spontaneous stage of devotion, Mother Jasoda, she doesn't need a songbook. She doesn't even need instruments. She just has the rope for churning butter and bangles, and that's her instruments, as she's churning the churning rod that goes into the pot where the yogurt is, and she's moving the rope back and forth to churn the yogurt. And the bangles on her arm are clanging. And then she's thinking of Krishna. And as she's thinking of Krishna, she sings about Krishna. And she's just singing spontaneous glorifications of Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna, how the wonderful activities in his childhood. That's not sadhana, vidhi sadhana bhakti, that's prema bhakti. So we do in our vidhi sadhana bhakti stage things that in their mature form are found in the spiritual world. During the Mahaprakash Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Leela where he moved from the position of the mood of the devotee of Krishna to the position of Vishnu, he sat right on the altar. It says the throne of Vishnu. He sat on the altar and said, perform Abhishek. So the devotees went to the Ganges and got buckets full, clay pots in their case, full of Ganges water, hundreds and hundreds, and he sat there and they performed Abhishek. Then he said, find nice garments and dress me. Deity worship. So they did. They found fine garments. Then nice ornaments, sandalwood paste, garlands. Now bring offering. Just like it was deity worship. And he was the deity sitting on the altar. This is where we have our Gaura Arti song. That's what it's speaking. Now have kirtan and glorify me. Because it was completely out of mood for him to take the position of the Supreme Lord. He was the devotee of that same Supreme Lord. But when we do our sadhana, we practice like that. By Nam Sankirtan, he had elevated his associates in the house of Sri Vasangan to the position of ecstatic prema bhakti. And in that ecstatic prema bhakti state, they worshipped him. They were not at that stage with the sadhana bhakti. If done properly, it leads one into the bhava stage, bhava bhakti. And if executed properly, leads one to the prema bhakti stage. Very naturally flows. And it starts from a seed, and then a little plant with some leaves, and then the maturing stages of that plant with leaves, and then fruits, the flowers, and then fruits in the mature stage. So the metaphor is given that of a creeper, bhakti lata, bija, seed of devotion to Krishna. Sadhana is the cultivation of that bhakti lata. Once again, it's acting in our relationship with Krishna. So that's our topic for this visit. Sadhana bhakti. How to focus on doing our sadhana better. How to practice acting in our relationship with Krishna better. I thought a nice place to discuss that topic from is found in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter number 5, where Prahlad Maharaj is discussing with his father about sadhana bhakti. Of course, that's not at all what Hirani Kashipu was expecting to hear from his son about sadhana bhakti to Vishnu, because Vishnu, from Hirani Kashipu's perspective, is his enemy. And it's hard for us to think like friend-enemy when it comes to Vishnu, but it wasn't hard for Hirani Kashipu. That was his enemy. His arch-rival competitor, who he hated with a passion. He hated Vishnu because Vishnu killed his brother Hiranyaksha, and he hated him and he wanted revenge. Now here's his son who is talking about sadhana bhakti unto Vishnu. So in chapter 5, Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad. He had placed him in the care of Sanda and Amarka, the two sons of Shukracharya, who was the priest of the Daityas. And Sanda and Amarka had been training up Prahlad how to be a nice demon. And so Hiranyakashipu called his son, come sit on my lap, my dear son, And now, with tears coming down his eyes, very soft hearted, saying, "Can you please tell me in school what is the best of that knowledge that you have heard?" And Prahlad's answer was, "Well, my dear father, I really haven't heard anything of value in school, but I can tell you something of value. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atman Vedanam." So this is Prahlad speaking about the nine processes of devotional service. I read a little bit from the purport. It's a very long and wonderful and very important purport. 7, 5, 23, and 24. Prabhupada writes in his purport, "When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father to say something from whatever he had learned, he considered that what he had learned from the spiritual master, that's Narada, was the best of all teachings, whereas what he had learned about diplomacy from material teachers, Sunda and Namarka, was useless. Bhakti Parishana Bhava Virakir Anyatra Cha." That's a quote from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. That's what that phrase means. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. The process of temple worship is called archana. How one performs archana will be explained herein. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone. Suhridam sarva-bhutana. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called Sakyam. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the result to Vishnu. But he's indicating that's really what needs to be done with sadhana, because it's the essence message here is submission unto Krishna or Vishnu, and various forms of expression of that is what sadhana is. Now, on the topic of hearing or shravanam, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gives the following explanation. The word shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, and entourage and pastimes, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. So just underscore the point. Sadhana, if one wants to learn typing, then you may go to a school to learn how to do typing. Then you practice. You go to your home after you take the lesson in school and you practice typing. And that practice of typing is a sadhana. Or you learn how to play drum. You go to a drum teacher, the drum teacher is showing you different beats. But it's not just you go to class, you have to practice. Any teacher of music will tell you, "I'm not going to take you as a student if you don't practice. No point." Practice and practice and practice and practice, and that practice is sadhana. Theory and application of that theory. Jnana and vijnana, practical application. Sadhana is a practical application. of those various things, the topics of Krishna, and then practice and practice and practice and practice. That practice also has this component of kirtan, when you were engaged in the process of hearing and chanting. You hear topics of Krishna and you express them, just as what we're doing right now, just as we do when we have sankirtan. Someone leads, person listens, they respond. And what we're doing right now, same thing. Some hearing, someone has heard something, and then they express it. Shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting. That's sadhana. What we're doing right now is the kirtanam, both the shravanam and kirtanam part. When Shukadeva Goswami was speaking, it was kirtan, speaking the message of the Bhagavatam. But before it was shravanam, he heard it from Shukadeva, from Vyasadeva. Then in the audience was Sutta, shravanam. Later on, he spoke it to the sages of Naimisharanya, kirtanam. I'm going slowly over these points so that we have a very clear understanding of what the topic is. Hearing and chanting is the essence of these nine processes of bhakti. It's the foundation for all other expressions of bhakti, including the expression of deity worship, but also even the expression of retaining remembrance of Krishna, so that when we're doing other things, like going to school, or going to work, or doing duties in the home, or whatever it is that we, you know, that we're doing in life, living our life, there's this remembrance of Krishna, which is also an expression of devotion to Krishna, based upon our hearing and chanting. Our Krishna conscious lives are established by this core sadhana, hearing and chanting. So Prabhupada writes, shravanam. He goes through the nine processes one by one. Here's shravanam. Hearing the holy name of the Lord, shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name of the Lord is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Lord, Nishvara Parama Krishna Sanchit Ananda Vigraha. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. In this way, a devotee advances further and further toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form and qualities, his paraphernalia, and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process is shravanam, kirtanam Vishnu. The same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. When chanting the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of a pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee. That's not sadhana. I was recently asked, there's a growing phenomena in the United States of people traveling around and having kirtan, non-devotees, professional singers, traveling around and having kirtan. There's a kirtan circuit, largely today it's in yoga studios or yoga ashrams, and they have the invite. If they find there's yoga students like it, they'll pay for it. So they invite people that are good at singing. And without mentioning names, they're either non-devotees, just like materialists, literally materialists, or impersonalists. So that's not sadhana. That's not the hearing and chanting. We're forbidden from that. Maybe that's not a problem here. Maybe it is. At some point it probably will become, if it's not already, the popularity of kirtan. Or the recitation of scripture, Ramayan Katha reciters, Bhagavad Katha reciters that do this as a profession, or even that don't do it as a profession, they're just sentimentalists that don't have proper training. Having not submitted oneself under the training of a qualified person, a Shuddha Bhakta, or one who is in the line of Shuddha Bhakti, then one can't be qualified. As an example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was one Bengali scholar, Brahmana, who composed some poetry about Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya. And he had come to Puri to share that with Lord Chaitanya. So the rule was, before the Lord Chaitanya would hear anything like that, it had to pass through Srupa Damodar. So the devotees were saying, Srupa Damodar, you should hear this man's poetry. He was thinking, oh, I don't hear this man's poetry. Oh, but it's so wonderful. No, I don't want to hear it. But after days and days, finally, Srupa Damodar agreed, all right, I'll hear his poetry. And so they brought the poet, they brought the Bengali Vaishnav there, and he started reading his poetry, and it sounded very, very nice if one wasn't trained as Srupa Damodar was trained. And he was speaking in that poetry of the life of Lord Chaitanya, the life of Lord Jagannath, who was within Lord Jagannath. So just to be sure, when he was done, Srupa Damodar asked him, can you explain what you mean by the life of Lord Jagannath? Lord Jagannath is wood, and Lord Chaitanya is light, and the life of Lord Jagannath is within Lord Jagannath in the form, just like a soul in the body. So Srupa Damodar blasted him. You nonsense. You're comparing Lord Jagannath to a living entity that has a material body. The form of Lord Jagannath is Lord Jagannath. There's no inside and outside of Lord Jagannath. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself. They're not different. He's not the life of Lord Jagannath. They're the same. You're two fundamental misconceptions you're presenting in this so-called poetry. You're nonsense. If you want to speak words of appreciation of the Supreme Lord, You must place yourself under the qualified devotee and hear from that devotee over a long time so that you're then very clear and your misconceptions are removed and your heart has become cleansed. That's sadhana. When you perform sadhana bhakti, then you can write something that's worth hearing. Otherwise, you're just a nonsense. And everyone thought, whoa, we thought he was a great devotee. We don't really have the qualification to understand who is a great devotee. Because he was chanting glories of Lord Chaitanya. Or another who came to Puri who was constantly chanting Ram's name. Lord Chaitanya wouldn't give a moment's attention to this man. And everyone thought, why is Lord Chaitanya being like this? He's such an elevated Vaishnava. He's constantly chanting Ram's name. But the man was proud. And the man was an impersonalist. So Lord Chaitanya didn't have anything to do with prideful people. And impersonalists. And we should also follow that example. We look to the quality of the individual, the consciousness and the conceptions, and are they properly manifesting the message of disciplic succession? If not, we don't participate. We don't become angry with the people, but we're hateful towards the people. We just don't participate. Why? Because we're interested in our relationship with Krishna. And those things aren't going to lead you to a relationship with Krishna. A misconception will lead you in the wrong direction. It's like asking directions from somebody. How to get to someplace? How do we get to the boat crossing? How do we get to the bridge crossing? Somebody says go this way, somebody says go that way, somebody says go that way. I better find somebody that knows how to get to the bridge crossing if I want to get there. Or anything else in life. Sadhana is for our relationship with Krishna, and qualified persons will know how to apply even that which looks like Vedic practice. And we ourselves should, so we're fortunate, we're at the shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. We're doing our sadhana. But, so we're going to spend a little bit more time through the course of this visit and speak more about how to do that hearing and chanting in ways that are effective that will take us to Krishna. And then that also means saying what not to do when trying to do our sadhana in an effective way to reach Krishna, with the assumption that we're here because we want to reach Krishna and restore our relationship with Krishna, to do that sadhana in an effective way. I'll read a little bit more. On Kirtanam, long section for Kirtanam. The hearing of the holy name has been described above. Now let us try to understand the chanting of the holy name, which is the second item in the consecutive order. It is recommended that such chanting be performed very loudly, rather than being silently within your mind. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says that without shame he began traveling all over the world chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised Trinadati Suni Chainaturo Apisa Hishnana Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadhari. Adoni can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, more tolerant than a tree, offering respects to everyone without respecting honor from anyone else. Such qualification makes it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. That topic is such an important topic. We held a 3.5-day seminar in Gitanagari, just on a farm in Pennsylvania, just on that topic. The third verse of Shikshastakam. So that we could chant more effectively. The mood with which you take up your practice, your sadhana, says everything about the quality of that sadhana. So maybe we'll dedicate one session to discussing the Shikshastakam verse at third. The process of transcendental chanting can be easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit, classified lower than others, devoid of material qualifications, or not even at all elevated in terms of pious activities. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. It is understood from the authoritative source of Vedic literature that especially in the age of Kali, people are generally short-lived, extremely bad in their habits, and inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide. Moreover, they're always disturbed by material conditions, and they're mostly unfortunate. So what to do? Chant the holy name. And so the chanting of Krishna's holy name, we shouldn't take it for granted. One of the things that hurts our lives is familiarity. Like in the matter of Vaishnava association, when we have regular association with someone, we come to understand what their qualities are, but we also understand what their faults are. And you become familiar with someone, with a devotee or the devotees or a dear friend or a spouse, you come to know all about their shortcomings. And you lose sight of that most rare and special and valuable part of that devotee's life, and that's the soul's attraction to Krishna. And then we start in that familiarity mood, we start to become critical. Familiarity breeds contempt, and being critical in the age of Kali is like drinking water. It's so common. Quarrel and argue and find fault. But it's the opposite of spiritual elevation. So to do our sadhana properly, this very, 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 very special process of chanting the holy name, we shouldn't become familiar with it and take it for granted. We should hold it with great... What's the antidote? The medicine for familiarity? Anybody can say? Simply in one word? To prevent familiarity, there should be respect. And what is it that we respect in the case of the devotee? Out of all the souls in this created realm, they're very special souls, few in number, and most valuable. The jewel of their life is their attraction to Krishna. Out of all souls in this creation, that I respect. I should stay with that respect. And a nice example of this with deity worship is the deities are over on that side on the altar, raised up on a raised platform, and we can't just walk up and directly address the deity because we're out here. There's this elevated position of respect. And the pujari who, because of their qualification, they're directly right next to the deity and handling the deity and touching the deity and dressing the deity and bathing the deity and ornamenting the deity, and it's very intimate. So that's an opportunity to become familiar if they're not careful. So they have to be very qualified persons, and in that qualification, one of that principal qualifications is respect and dealing with Krishna, not just a job, getting this duty done, but it's very, very, very confidential service. And chanting the holy name, which all of us are doing, is also, we're directly manifesting Krishna by sound vibration, and Krishna's fully present in that sound vibration, and we're all doing that, although we're not qualified. He's merciful. He's making himself available to us in that very, very merciful form. So we should be very respectful of what the holy name is when we're doing our sadhana, chanting of the holy name. This is where this sambandha, again, understanding what's what. The holy name is not just a ritual or, you know, a means that I can feel better and fix my day up, something like that. It can be all of those things, but we're associated with Krishna. So we'll speak some more about this, avoiding of offenses when chanting, so the quality of our sadhana is better. This is just a starting point of what I understand I'm being asked to do, this extended discussion about sadhana. To just go back and identify the bullet points that I wanted to express so it sticks. Sadhana means we're trying, it's an expression of reestablishing our relationship with Krishna. That relationship is eternal. We broke it. We turned away and went a different direction. And found that the happiness that we wanted was not there. We want again to establish relationship with Krishna. That's the spirit of it. And we should be in the spirit of sadhana as we're doing sadhana. So when we're calling to Krishna, we should be conscious of what we're doing, not just routinely doing it, mechanically doing it, but from your heart doing it. And that the principal expressions of sadhana are hearing and chanting. It's the essence of our Bhagavat Marga, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that means for us hearing and chanting are the forms of the expression of sadhana, although that leads to other forms like deity worship and so on. And that's a second. But the third bullet point is that we need proper sambandha gyan, very clearly having the proper conception of who is Krishna, because if we don't have a conception of who is Krishna that's proper, we've not received that from a proper source, it can lead you in an offensive direction, unfortunately. And the mood, the humble mood of service, Trinadapi Samichina, that verse we'll expand on more, but it will help us qualitatively improve our chanting and our sadhana. It's a common amongst devotees that are very serious about Krishna conscious practice. One of the first things that they may say to one another is, you know, the conventional thing is, how are you? How is everything? And just fine. It's just, but a devotee will ask, how's your sadhana? How is your bhajan? How effective are you in it? How have you going to reconnect with Krishna? Is Krishna accepting you? What's happening in your heart? In your relationship with Krishna from your sadhana? Because that's where interest should go. Any comments or questions, anyone? Something that you heard that inspires you, aside from just the presence of someone who is intensely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and that in itself is an inspiration. It lifts one. And then, absent that physical presence of that person, so things go back. So take to continue that sense of being in that association, take something that you heard and apply it. But apply it in a very specific way. Apply it in a way where it's an expression of reciprocation unto that person from whom you heard that something. I'll elaborate. When two examples, Dhruva and Prahlad. When Dhruva asked Narada, can you tell me how I can find Vishnu? My mother told me, if I want a kingdom that will surpass my father and my father's father and my father's father's father, that would only be possible if Vishnu could grant that desire. Can you tell me how I can find Vishnu? Narada examined Dhruva three different ways. He tried to detract his attention to not doing that, wait till later, you're so on. Don't be in this get back mentality, give that up, it won't do you well. Dhruva was determined. So when he saw the determination of Dhruva, he gave him the means by which he could achieve Vishnu's association. And he gave him a mantra to chant. And in effect, he accepted him as a disciple and trained him. So what Dhruva did was not just he applied. This is very important. In your question and in life, he felt deeply grateful. He circumambulated Narada, and he was carrying in his heart not only, oh, now I have my means to reach Vishnu so I can get that kingdom, but he was feeling very, very grateful, extremely grateful, because Narada didn't have to do that, but Narada did that. Narada came out of his way to find Dhruva in the forest and give him that means. He felt very grateful. So as he was applying, he was feeling grateful. So out of gratitude, what removed the material motivation in his life was that gratitude that grew, along with the sadhana that nurtured that relationship, ultimately the relationship with Vishnu, because Vishnu only comes, he doesn't come by mechanical performance of something, he comes by devotion. He becomes disclosed and known by devotion. So that's application in this mood of gratitude unto our wonderful disciplic succession and the representatives of disciplic succession that offer that unto us. Then it stays. It doesn't fade, it grows. Gratitude. Application in a mood of gratitude. I can give other examples. In Prabhupada's presence, he gave his association. I was on two occasions, two separate morning walks with Srila Prabhupada, he spoke on this point. One morning was in Vrindavan. Have you been to Vrindavan? So you know the front gate of the Krishna Balaram temple. So it wasn't all those shops, it was nothing during that time. So out the front gate, down the road to the right, way down and then way back. That was the morning walk. There was like a grove of trees way down on the right. All those buildings weren't there, it was just fields. And into the grove of trees and came back. We're approaching, we can hear the kirtan. The devotees were anticipating greeting Prabhupada. That was the scene on that road. Prabhupada stopped, put his cane down and said, why are there so few devotees here on this morning walk? And nobody knew what to say. And Prabhupada said, when there's opportunity for association with the spiritual master, one should take that association. Then he said, there's two kinds of association. There's, you've heard this before, but I'm just repeating. There's vapu, physical association, and vani, instruction through association through sound vibration. So then he repeated the point. When there's opportunity for physical association, one should seek it, accept it. And in that physical association, what is it that one can do? One can render some physical service. But when that association is there, most important is vani. Even more important than the physical service is the message. And then, in the physical absence of the spiritual master, there's vani. So, my response to you was to stay with the vani, because that's not different than the person, and even more important than the physical association. So we need to learn the art of how to associate through vani, to sustain that inspiration and grow it. How to associate with vani, and the application of what one hears is how one can sustain. Think about it for just a moment. Those of us that are disciples of Srila Prabhupada, what's sustaining our inspiration? After all these years, we're still going. Something is sustaining us. It's that art of how to associate with our spiritual master, our source of inspiration, our life and soul, through his vani, and then live it, manifest it, carry it in our hearts, and it comes out through all forms of expression of our lives. With feelings of gratitude and serving him, pleasing him, message for our mind as an expression of our gratitude and love for him, then it doesn't. It grows. The other response that I, so application with gratitude, the other point is relationship. When you're, I was discussing this point of sadhana being reestablishing our relationship with Krishna. And those persons who are assisting us to reestablish our relationship with Krishna, there's a commitment to that relationship. And when there's a commitment to a relationship, think of someone that you have a deep commitment in a relationship, a family member or wife or something, someone that you have a deep commitment. When that deep commitment is there, because the value of that relationship and the commitment to that relationship is so strong, it shapes things that you do and don't do. This is discussed in a little philosophical, but in Sri Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma is speaking to Vishnu, and this is after his realization of all the Brahma Samhita prayers. He's got this doubt. He's hearing on the topic of, what do I do? I have my worldly thing. I've got this, I want to create a universe. And in our lives, you know, we want to do something. Maybe not to create a universe, but we want to do something. And when we go off in our lives and doing something, we may forget that which is the inspiration, that how I can increase my devotion to Krishna. I get so absorbed with those other things, I lose that connection, that inspiration. So he didn't want to do that. I don't want to go off and create a universe and lose this connection. What should I do? And Vishnu then explains that by the force of the material nature, everyone does something. And those things that we do, it's directed by those values that we hold especially, and that shapes what we do. So if we value the spiritual relationship, that will shape what we do. That the inspiration will continue to, like the, you know, the nurturement, the watering of the creeper of bhakti will continue because of that commitment to the relationship. Just like, you know, there's many things in your life that you do and wouldn't do. The do's and the don'ts are shaped by that, those relationships, that which you value. And one of the things that's the opposite is when people have a broken family situation where relationships are just like terrible. Those persons, their values are distorted, and that's where we have problems. We have so many problems, crime problems, and terrible problems because of that value system is broken. So on the spiritual, as in worldly things and spiritual things, commitments to those spiritual relationships, and it can be multiple. It shapes what we do, and it shapes what we're feeling. I'm a strong believer in the essence of Krishna consciousness is relationships. Ultimately, our relationship with Krishna. Why do we value other relationships, especially in Krishna consciousness, is because they're manifestations sent by Krishna into our lives to nurture and assist us in that relationship with Krishna. And that's what the spiritual world is. Loving relationships centered upon Krishna. So if I value that, that will certainly assist the sustained inspiration. It's another way of living besides part of the reason that things dissipate over time is time. The time energy destroys things. But also a thing that destroys things over time is our selfishness. Like, you know, you pour water in a bucket and it all leaks out because our paradigm in life is often selfish. That's how we calculate what's in it for me. Rather than what I can give. And then the relationship is where you commit to give, not just what's in it for me. And that, as that brings us into the spiritual realm where things don't deteriorate, they sustain. So another part of what I'm saying here is when we can receive something that's spiritual on a spiritual plane and not just in the mind saying, yes, this feels good, I like it. But because if it's not fully on the spiritual plane, over time the mind will go to something else and will dissipate. The bucket leaks. And then all the water that we keep pouring in keeps leaking out. But won't leak out if the spiritual dimension is activated, and that spiritual dimension is the conception, stay on the spiritual platform through these two items I've mentioned, the relationship, commitment to a relation, a spiritual relationship, and the other side, or the other point is application with feelings of gratitude. Then that message doesn't fade, it grows, it becomes deeply part of our value system, and that thing that we hold as important. And then, as Lord Vishnu said to Lord Brahma, our life simply becomes an expression of those values. Because we're performing sadhana bhakti, it's to be expected. It has its ups and its downs, the hills and the valleys, the sine curve. But progress is the amplitude of that sine curve becomes less. There's less downs, and there's more steadiness. And one progresses up, 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 up in a steady manner. So that's the third answer. Be patient. And continue to apply the process of Krishna consciousness in ways that you're learning. And then it does become less the hills and the valleys. Becomes more steady. Nishtha bhakti instead of anishtha bhakti. So just purification and gradual maturing of our attraction and devotion to Krishna. But the essence of that attraction and devotion to Krishna is the form of relationships. Vaishnavas, and those representing Krishna. Anyone else? No? Yeah?
No, I just, you know, talking about relationships.
Yeah.
Sometimes we feel that developing relationship with Krishna, we can do that without developing relationship among our Vaishnava circle. How that do?
Not so. Not so. Two very simple responses to that is, just as Krishna speaks to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also speaks to Arjuna in Adi Purana. And in Adi Purana, Krishna says to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. The one who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. So we approach Krishna through, and we reestablish our relationship with Krishna through his devotees. I often think like this and speak like this. A or B, when that wonderful day comes that we return to the spiritual world and we're before Krishna, A, it's just Krishna and me. Or B, at Krishna's lotus feet there are innumerable loving associates of Krishna, simply, joyfully, ecstatically serving Krishna, and I get the opportunity to serve Krishna in their association. What's it going to be, A or B? It's B. And so, to get to that stage, I have to practice and purify myself sufficiently so that I can be in the association of Krishna's loving devotees who are at his feet, trying to serve him very nicely. That's needed in order to come to the position of serving Krishna. It's not alone. Therefore, we have the association of devotees. And back to an earlier point, not to reject nor to accept in a familiar way and become then contemptuous or fault-finding. While shortcomings may be theirs, we serve even in the matter of someone has a shortcoming. Okay, let me serve this nice devotee and help them with this shortcoming situation that they're dealing with, because I want to serve them. I certainly think of that service in relation to my duty as a spiritual master. It's just to assist people, devotees, who want to come closer to Krishna, to amplify the activities of devotion and help them overcome some shortcomings. Just, it's just a service. But it's not just, you know, hire or peers. It's all categories of devotees. We're constitutionally servants. Say the same thing differently. We're constitutionally servants. Now, how can we be constitutionally servants and it only applies to Krishna and not to the devotees of Krishna? It doesn't make sense. It's not right. Constitutionally service with all of Krishna's creation. Constitutionally serving in an appropriate manner. That we have to learn the art of what's appropriate. And make our hearts pure.
Most of the time, we operate or render service in the mode of passion and ignorance. Is it a must that we have to come to the mode of goodness so that we can go to the transcendental path from there?
Yeah, I sure. And the conditioning of the lower modes of nature looks at the mode of goodness as unpleasant, although it's, because that's the nature. Happiness in the mode of goodness, by Krishna's definition, in the beginning seems to be like poison, and the end turns out to be nectar. So to approach those habits and ways of life that are conducive to the mode of goodness in the lower mode, they don't appear to be attractive. So what's going to, back to this other point that I was making, one of the biggest impetuses to do it anyway is because of relationship. Like the way the Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness in the West is very telling. He didn't introduce standards of mode of goodness. He didn't introduce regular principles, which are the pillars of goodness. What he did was he gave himself, he gave the holy name, and he gave some classes, but he gave himself. And the relationship, even if the devotees didn't understand the philosophy, they knew one thing. The Prabhupada loved them, and they loved Prabhupada, and that was the fuel in their tank. That's what carried them down the road, kept them going. And then when Prabhupada was asked, are there some regulations that we should follow? And he said yes, he gave the regulations. Based upon that relationship, they followed. Not because, you know, we want a life of goodness, but we just, as much as their commitment in that relationship to Srila Prabhupada carried them into that, and in that realm. Of course, chanting of the holy name also provided that medium. But it's a little bit like this earlier question of sustaining enthusiasm and inspiration. How do you sustain the quality of goodness? In this age of Kali, what's going on around us is not going to sustain goodness. Everything's going to deteriorate. The lower modes of nature are abundantly in our face. All around us. Everywhere. So something has to uplift us. The practices of sadhana are most effectively performed, framed in goodness. And what's going to sustain that goodness is our wish to receive the benefit of chanting of the holy name, but to fulfill. Let me share this. It's from Srimad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatan Goswami is the author. B.B.T. has recently published it. It's a very elevated literature, but very, very wonderful. It's in two parts. Part one and part two. And part two is an individual, a fictitious individual named Gopa Kumar. Gopa, he's a cowherd boy. His name is Kumar. Kumar means he's very young. Gopa Kumar. That's his name. And he's a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Not at Krishna's time, just that was, he was born in a family, that was their occupation, he worked at cows. And in the course of being a small boy, he saw one sadhu who was just absorbed, happily, ecstatically absorbed in his chanting Krishna's holy name. So he was just a small boy, and he and some other small boys came and they like hung out with this sadhu. And of course, with hanging out with the sadhu, Gopa Kumar started developing a deepening appreciation for this sadhu. The sadhu naturally showed his affection to this little boy who was so spiritually inclined. So after some period of time, the sadhu, the boy, Gopa Kumar, said, would you give me this mantra that you're chanting? Would you initiate me into this chanting of this mantra? So the sadhu said, yes. We'll take you back into the religion when I come back in a cleansed state, and I'll give you this mantra. He gave him this Madan Gopal mantra. And then almost mysteriously, this sadhu disappeared. But Gopa Kumar, he said, by the chanting of this mantra, you will achieve all perfection of life. But he didn't tell him how to chant. Should he chant it silently? Should he chant it aloud? Should he chant it a certain number of times of the day? Should he chant it during certain times of the day? Should he chant it all day? There's no instruction. No sambandha gyan, No, I'll be dead again. Just take this mantra. But he had faith in that sadhu that all perfection will come. One day I will meet Madan Gopal. That seed was there. So then the desire to see and experience the presence of Madan Gopal is the theme of the whole. It's just like two volumes that make up this much for the commentary. So he's searching for Madan Gopal. He's on this quest, with that kind of quest literature. And he goes through so many situations. He goes through the whole universe. He goes beyond the universe. He comes back into the universe. He goes to Vaikuntha Loka. And wherever he goes, he's searching for Madan Gopal. He wants to fulfill that which his spiritual master wanted to give him. So this is the point of protection and also, again, of relationship. But he says specifically, I would simply be ungrateful if that which my spiritual master wanted me to receive through the gift, through giving me of this mantra, if I didn't achieve it, wasn't like so I can get, it wasn't fruitive. Passion. It was goodness. It was out of gratitude, out of feelings of great happiness for what my spiritual master has given me, although he didn't tell me even how to do it. Later he came back and there were some meetings and he described some how-to things. But because he's given me this impetus, this potential, I would be ungrateful if I didn't fulfill it. That's a devotional, not a fruitive motivation. Interesting melody. Sustaining, the longer explanation of sustaining motive goodness can come directly as a result of the quality of devotion. And the quality of devotion says, for the happiness of the other person who I am in a relationship with, I made commitment to that relationship, and the commitment is to receive what that person in with whom I have this relationship wants to give. That's devotion. That sustains goodness. It keeps one from being distracted. Loka Kumar became Lord Brahman, Brahma Loka, for some time. And he was feeling, this is nice, but where's Madan Gopal? So many things. He became King Indra in Indraloka. He became king in a heavenly, in an earthly planet. So with so many attainments in a short lifetime, but he wanted to fulfill that which his spiritual master had given him the opportunity to fulfill. It sustained the quality of goodness. Devotion does that. Anyone else? Okay. Hopefully you'll loosen up a little bit in the course of my being here, a little bit more dialogue. Maybe I'm intimidating.